is She Reads. This is she, Alma Limon. Always, always grateful to you for tuning in. Today I have an extra special episode, and it's special because I have never done this before. So the first part of the episode, I will be talking about everything, the entire episode actually, I'm going to be talking about everything I never told you. But for the second half, I'm not going to be talking all by myself. I'm going to have one of my favorite people from the Bookstagram community joining me to discuss this book, and I couldn't be more excited. You know her. She's been here before. Her name is Beth at Beth's Bookshelf on Instagram. So, we're going to be talking about this book at the end of the episode. Not at the end, kind of halfway through this episode. And the first part is kind of spoiler-free. I'm just going to tell you my overall feels about this book, what I learned, all the questions that now I am asking myself thanks to this book. And then the second part, once Beth comes in, it's definitely a spoiler section. We go a little bit more in depth into the book scenes and what happens. So if you want to read the book and you don't want to, you don't want us to spoil it for you, then I just recommend you to stop listening halfway through. I will let you know when you should just stop this podcast, this episode, so don't worry about that. So in case you don't know what this book is about, let me tell you, let me read you the back of the book. And it says, Lydia is dead, but they don't know this yet. So begins this exquisite novel about a Chinese-American family living in 1970s small town Ohio. Lydia is the favorite child of Marilyn and James Lee, and her parents are determined that she will fulfill the dreams they were unable to pursue. But when Lydia's body is found in the local lake, the delicate balancing act that has been keeping the Lee family together is destroyed, tumbling them into chaos. A profoundly moving story of family, secrets, and longing, Everything I Never Told You is both a gripping page-turner and a sensitive family portrait, uncovering the ways in which mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, and husbands and wives struggle all their lives to understand one another. So yeah, this is what the book is about. Personally, I don't think I could have chosen a better time to read this book. It feels almost as if this book chose me, because about maybe 2 months ago, I started to really think in depth and to write and to journal about expectations and how powerful they are. And this novel touches on that, on how much power somebody else's expectations have on us. And sometimes even our own expectations have on us, to the point that they might drown us, or we might drown in them. So the main character in this novel, Lydia, drowned in them. The question that this book attempts to answer is not if she's dead or not, or how she died. That's told, as you already know. You already know from what I read at the back of the book. But what this novel explores, rather, is the family dynamics among, in this case, the Lees, and how these dynamics led Lydia to drown in a lake. It's about the cracks in their relationships, the secrets people keep, the things we don't say, and it leaves us wondering how this family will survive this tragedy. Before I get into the characters, I want to share a quote that I think resonates very well with this topic. I read this to you already in my latest solo episode, in which I talk about authenticity. If you haven't listened to that, I highly encourage you to, but I'm going to read this quote in case you didn't listen to that one, because I think it's very important. And it says, great people do not have something that the rest of us lack. They have simply stripped away many things that got in the way of their best self. And I think this is what happened to Lydia in this case, that she did not succeed in stripping away from all the things that wasn't her. And it happens to the best of us. It happens to all of us. We put on these labels. We put on these expectations of other people, of even our own expectations, and we forget who we are. So, yeah, man, let's strip away from everything that is not us. I know it's easier said than done. And as I said, I have a whole episode about being true to yourself and why not. But I just really wanted to share that quote to you. So let's talk about characters a little bit before we get into the discussion with Beth. So I was fascinated by Lydia's parents, who are James and Marilyn. And I think this is because I am a true believer that parents are our first true love, and they have the power to teach us how to love and what to expect from it. And I do have an entire episode about it, and it's very personal. It's about my parents and their relationship, but it's only available on Apple Podcasts for some reason, and I think it's called We Deserve Good Love Stories or something like that. It was, like, I think my third episode or something. Anyway, James and Marilyn, they were my favorite characters, not because they were likable, but because how well-developed they were. They were extremely well-unpacked. They felt so real to me. The way Celeste, I'm going to call her Celeste, that's the author, Celeste Ng, but yeah, I'm just going to go with Celeste because that's how I pronounce the name. Anyway, so the way the author describes their relationship from the moment they met up to when, and I'm quoting here, when James is thinking that it has been so long since he thought of his wife as a creature of want. I think the way this relationship was unpacked was just beautiful. You get a sense of what it's like to be falling in love with someone for the first time, and then after years together, how they fell out of it. So let's talk about Marilyn for a second. She's a white woman from Virginia, and she's a housewife. And to be honest, this is the problem of the whole book about her, that she's a wife, and she wanted to be a doctor. She got pregnant and got married and couldn't do it, couldn't pursue that dream of her. So I'll start backwards. When the author was writing the novel, she took inspiration from a 60s cookbook called Betty Crocker's Cookbook. So the inspiration to create Marilyn came from the text that comes around the recipes, which said things like, and I'm quoting here, "If you care about pleasing a man, make a pie, but make sure it's a perfect pie." And there's another one that I found hilarious that says, "The man you will marry will know the way he likes his eggs, and chances are he will be fussy about them. So it is who is a good wife to know how to make an egg behave." I can't even read this with a straight face. But anyway, this book is actually in the novel, and it represents a very important moment for both Lydia and Marilyn. But what I wanted to talk about, and I do talk about that with Beth, is that this was not, like, now I laugh about it, and probably you are as well. But at the time, it was serious. It was a serious book on how to please your man, because that pleasing your man was the thing that you were supposed to get satisfaction from in your life. Yeah, Marilyn was not one of those girls, one of those women. She had different ambitions for herself. And again, I find it very interesting. This was a type of content that you as a woman were exposed to at the time. And I honestly, I can understand that a lot of women are nowadays even happy and content with that, being a housewife and getting satisfaction out of it, not going to judge that. But I think it's normal now to want that. But back in the day, it wasn't. And Marilyn didn't want that for herself. However, that is what she ended up getting. She met James and got pregnant, and she couldn't go to medical school. So she had two kids, Nathan and Lydia. And then she finds this cookbook, which belonged to her mother, reads this text around the recipes, which are not exactly those, I think. I think they're a little bit different. But and it makes her rethink her life completely. She basically remembers all the expectations she had for herself that she did not meet. And she makes questionable decisions that we also talk about that a little bit later on. But yeah, another fact that I found during research is that interracial marriage was illegal everywhere in the United States until 1967. So, yikes. Anyway, James, now let's move on. Let's talk about James. Grew up feeling and knowing he was visually different from the people around him. He is Chinese American. Dealing with people's expectations before they even talk to him. He is a professor of American history who specializes in cowboys. And to me, this was kind of like, you don't think I'm American, but I am. Like, you think I'm this way, but I'm not. So he was constantly challenging everyone else's expectations of him. And that being said, we have Lydia, who is the daughter, the middle daughter. The daughter of the mid. Anyway, James and Marilyn expected so much from her, and sometimes these expectations were conflicted because on one side, her mother wanted her to stand out in all the ways she didn't get to, and on the other side, her father wanted her to fit in all the ways he never could. So, okay. I just want to talk about everything, but I'm gonna keep it short so we get to the second part a little bit faster. So Lydia was also the favorite child, which is evident throughout the entire book by everyone, especially by her siblings Nathan and Hannah. And I have I've had this experience my entire life, not being the favorite child, but knowing up front who my mother's favorite child is, who is my older sister. And that's never been a secret. But what I didn't stop to think about before is how much of my sister is authentically her and how much is fabricated in order to be this perfect child, the favorite child. Is there anything she's not fully expressing for the sake of being the favorite? And this question, someone should have asked Lydia. Is there anything you're not saying? Is there anything you're doing that goes against what you really want to do just for the sake of being the favorite? Because again, she kind of makes a promise to her mother to be perfect. So now is the right time to leave this episode if you don't want to listen to any spoiler on the plot of this novel. This is the time I'm warning you, because Beth is coming and we are discussing very specific parts of the book, Everything I Never Told You. Enjoy.
I was so excited when I saw that you were reading it. I was like, oh, I wonder if she's going to do a podcast episode. I wonder if I can just like jump on with her. Cause like, I still feel like I'm reeling from this book. Like I read it like over a month ago and I'm like still thinking about it.
I know it was surprisingly good. I wanted to watch Little Fires Everywhere on Amazon, and I did. But first I wanted to read something from her.
Yeah.
And I found this book, actually, Everything I Never Told You. I wanted to read Little Fires Everywhere, but I couldn't find it. So I was like, okay, I'll just read this one. Might as well be the same thing. But I don't think it's the same thing just because the show, it's like so different from everything I expected.
Yeah, her two books are just so vastly different. And I actually finished Little Fires Everywhere last night, just the book, not the show. And I really didn't like it. I just, it just felt like it was written by a completely different person. It just did not match what I, like the way I loved Everything I Never Told You. But I know I'm kind of like in the minority with that. A lot of people prefer Little Fires Everywhere.
Okay, so I read your review.
Okay.
The other day. So I kind of know a little bit of what you think about it. I know you really like the book. So did I. There was just a couple things that didn't work for me.
Yeah.
It was honestly like just like one thing, and the one thing is Jack.
I know. And I saw that in your notes and I agree with you. But thank I was God. Curious because I was like, did Jack really make you drop a whole star and a half?
Yeah, dude.
Really? Poor Jack.
Yeah. I know, poor Jack. No, but the thing is, I've been reading other reviews and everyone seems to find a purpose for Jack and everyone loves Jack. And I'm like, I do not. I just don't. I just feel like every other character was so well unpacked.
Yep.
And then we have Jack that's just there. And I couldn't connect with him as much as I did with every other character. So I don't know, maybe. And it is also a very short book, I think.
Yep.
Like, I could have read maybe 100 more pages of this story with no problem.
Yeah, me too.
You know? And maybe there could have been a little bit more of Jack into it, and I would have liked the character. But yeah. I just didn't see it. I just didn't see why he was so important in the story.
I think, like, from what I took from it was that he was only there because it needed to feel like a mystery novel at some parts, and if he wasn't there, then there would only be like the five main characters all in the family.
But maybe Jack killed her or something, you know? Yeah, like I was like, oh, like this guy. So yeah, I guess I can see that. But I don't know, I just didn't connect to him as much. But what did you love the most about the book?
I think it's up there with the writing and then the characters. I think both of those things together is like what really makes this book feel special to me, because she's written her characters in such a focused and like deliberate way that even when you're just going around them, like through their daily movements, they're talking on the phone, they're making scrambled eggs, whatever, it just feels so fresh and like raw, especially in like the themes of grief. And I just felt like this was a real family. And
yeah,
that just like carried me through the whole book. Like you said, I could have read 100 more pages of them just doing their daily things and it would have been fine. Yeah.
So what do you think of the third person narrator in this book?
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that so much. I think it worked so well.
Yeah, I think it did too.
Like even that opening page where you get like every character's perspective of that morning where she's not there and like they don't know she's dead, but we do. That just like, okay, I'm hooked. Like,
hey guys, I thought I'd read to you the first page just for you to get a sense of what we're talking about here. And it says, Lydia is dead, but they don't know this yet. 1977, May 3rd, 6:30 in the morning. No one knows anything but this innocuous fact. Lydia is late for breakfast. As always, next to her cereal bowl, her mother has placed a sharpened pencil and Lydia's physics homework. Six problems flagged with small ticks. Driving to work, Lydia's father nudges a dial toward WXKP Northwest Ohio's best news source, vexed by the crackles of static. On the stairs, Lydia's brother, John's, still twining the tail end of his dream. And in her chair in the corner of the kitchen, Lydia's sister hunches moonlight over her cornflakes, sucking them to pieces, one by one, waiting for Lydia to appear. It's she who says at last, Lydia's taking a long time today.
And it makes you feel powerful as a reader because you know more than the characters do. And I just think that's like quite a special thing to do. I guess I've seen it in classic novels, but like not so much in modern contemporary.
I'm surprised because I am a first person narrator type of reader all the way. I really enjoy the I. I think it was done effectively, 100%, since like that first line for me just makes the whole book worth reading. You're intrigued from the very beginning. I really love that you could know, you know, what the characters were thinking and all. And now I'm going to skip like all the way to the end, I guess. But I think I wasn't given enough information. You know, I still like I'm left with like, oh, like was she trying to kill herself? She really thought she was going to make it? You know, I feel like by the end, the narrator kind of left me wondering.
Yeah. And I think like part of that is because throughout the entire book, like the author neglects Lydia's point of view. You get everyone's point of view, but like not really hers. And I think the ending was deliberate, and I'll like kind of say my theory on that as we get into it. But I also think that maybe like without kind of analyzing the ending, it sort of feels like, did the author not really know Lydia? Did the author not really know what she wanted Lydia to do?
Yeah.
And Lydia is like the least kind of filled character out of all of them, even though the book is like about her, which is a little bit odd. So I think like the same as you, I would have like loved more of Lydia.
Yeah. And speaking of Lydia, like what do you think of her as a character? I think that we get to know like bits of her that are not necessarily likable. Even though you understand why she is like she is, I guess, because of her parents and all of that. But I think that at the same time, we are provided with, you know, not the best parts of her.
Yeah, I think like we see the worst bits of her and we never ever really see the best bits of her. And she makes all these like so problematic decisions, like hiding her brother's acceptance letter and like telling her parents that she's failed physics when he's been accepted into Harvard to like bring back the attention on her. And I feel like we never got to see the good bits of her. But I also think that she wouldn't even know what those bits of herself were. I think she was never encouraged to be herself. And so I don't even think she would know how to portray herself as authentic, even if she had the chance.
So what do you think is the meaning behind the novel's title, To Whom the I and the You Refer?
So I think, like, if I were to use the title in a sentence, it would be, "What's destroyed you is everything I never told you."
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, every single person in this book has a secret, and every secret influences somebody else in the family, most of all Lydia. And if people were honest with her, would she have even gone down to that lake? Like, if she'd had the truth about why her dad was the way he was, why her mom was the way she was, would that have communication binded them tighter together? Or would she still have ended up at that lake feeling the way she did anyway? And likewise, if she had been honest with her family, would it have destroyed her or would it set her free? So I think, like, the I is Lydia, because she dies without anybody knowing her full truth, and the you is her family, but it could also be said to, like, every other character.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think, that it's just a very secretive family. And I think at some point all families have their secrets, and there is always a reason why people are the way they are. And most of the time we don't care to know the why. We just know we don't like them or we like them, and that's it. Maybe, what do you think about Hannah? Because she's like,
little Hannah,
like an afterthought. Like, she's there, but she's kind of ignored. But I think she's, unlike Jack, I think she's very important. I think she is very important.
Oh, she is. I loved Hannah. I think that I think she's a really strong character, but she doesn't know it. She's, like, neglected her entire life, but she is actually very observant to her surroundings. And I think she was, like, a really good example of, like, a character that actually drives forward the plot without doing much. Specifically with when Marilyn finds out that she's pregnant with Hannah, that destroys her dreams once again. And it's so sad. And I think there's, like, that niggling regret about Hannah that she, like, can't love her the same as she loves Lydia, because Lydia's actually the only child that she planned for. You know, Nath was a surprise and Hannah was a surprise. And I think Hannah, like, has to suffer the consequences of that throughout the whole book until the very, very end, when she finally is paid attention to.
And, you know, now that you're talking about it, and I'm thinking about Little Fires Everywhere, and you know how I said that they were completely different, but there is, like, this, like a similar storyline. I'm guessing it's the same in the book and in the show. Like, with Izzy, like, you know, the mom was about to, like, go on and pursue her career, and then turns out she's pregnant again with Izzy. And then Izzy's a small one who's super observant and questions things and all of this. So I think there's definitely, like, a similar storyline, even though this one is a little like more simple than the other.
The author definitely carries, like, certain themes across both her books. And I think she is actually quite good, even in Little Fires Everywhere, she is really good at capturing that mother-daughter relationship. So I don't know what happened there with her that makes her so good at grasping that, but it's definitely one of the most interesting things about her writing for me.
Yeah, for sure. And I saw an interview with her, with the author, and she said that she actually has a very, like, super normal, happy relationship with her mother. And I'm like, really? Like, do you? Debatable. But yeah, because she does a really good job in, like, this conflicting relationships, like mother-daughter relationships.
You're like, I don't believe you.
I don't believe you. Your writing says otherwise.
Yeah. Unless maybe she has, like, a bad relationship with somebody else, and she's kind of, embodied that into her mother-daughter. I don't even know.
Or maybe, I think she is a mother herself. So maybe.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's the thing. Okay. Here we are conspiring.
I know. Sorry, Celeste.
Sorry. Okay, so now I think it's time to talk about Marilyn, since we're talking about mother and daughter relationships.
Yeah.
So just overall, what do you think about Marilyn?
Mixed emotions to Marilyn.
Yes, same.
I think that Marilyn is a byproduct of her society. I think if she was born in the 90s, she would have had a good life, you know? She would have been able to have her career and her family, and it wouldn't have been frowned upon to have both of those things. So I think that she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, unfortunately.
I think Marilyn and James, like that relationship and those characters were my favorite characters just because I think they were very well developed.
Yeah.
You can see them from the beginning when they meet and to the very end when they wish they didn't meet in the first place. And I think you can really see that roller coaster going. Yeah. So even though I don't necessarily like them, but I think they were my favorite characters.
Yeah, it's so sad to see their relationship go from like just pure raw, like I want to be with you to like, I wish I'd never met you almost. But again, like if they had been born in the 90s or the 2000s, like that wouldn't have been as big of an obstacle. I'm not saying it wouldn't be because sexism and racism is still very much alive today, but it wouldn't have been as big of an obstacle.
Okay, guys, so I thought I would read to you a little bit of their relationship when they meet each other, so you get a sense, again, of what we're dealing with here. So this is right after Marilyn kisses James for the first time, and it says, when she'd kiss him, she had surprised herself. It had been such an impulse, the way she sometimes reached out to catch a stray leaf on the wind or jumped a puddle on a rainy day. Something done without thinking or resisting, something pointless and harmless. She had never done anything like that before and never would again. And looking back on it, she would forever be surprised at herself and a little shocked. But at that moment, she had known with a certainty she would never feel about anything else in her life that it was right, that she wanted this man in her life. Something inside her said he understands what it's like to be different. And now I'm going to read how James felt. It says, and James, what had he thought of her? He would never tell her this, would never admit it to himself. He had not noticed her at all that first lecture. He had looked right at her over and over as he held forth on Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and John Wayne. But when she came to his office, he had not even recognized her. Hers had been just one of the pale, pretty faces, indistinguishable from the next, and thought he would never fully realize it. And though he would never fully realize it, this was the first reason he came to love her, because she had blended in so perfectly, because she had seemed so completely and utterly at home. It's just weird because they really liked each other in the very beginning, but I think they were mismatched from that point, and not because they were from a different race, just because I think they wanted different things out of life.
Okay, and I didn't really pick up on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, Marilyn wanted to stand out all the time and to have a career. And then James was just like, just wanted to fit in with everything and just kind of. And I think that was what kind of sunk Lydia, because both parents wanted like different things from her.
Yeah, that's true.
In a way.
I guess like in the 70s, if you got pregnant, you would probably get married.
Yeah, I know. So. And then there's Marilyn's mother also.
Oh, yeah.
This is like three generations of problems.
She's a fun time.
Yeah, she is. And I don't know if you read on my notes, but I did some research on Marilyn because I really like her. And the inspiration from Marilyn was this book from the 70s.
Yeah.
This cookbook. And I was just like reading what was next to the recipes, like all these things of like, if you want to please a man, you better know how to make a pie or something like that.
Yeah, make a good pie.
Yeah, but it has to be the perfect pie. And I was oh my God, like this is so, it's awkward for me now to think that that was a serious thing, like a serious book. Mm-hmm. Like it's not comedy. It's not meant to make you laugh. It's actually.
It was serious advice. It was advice.
It was advice. And I was like, wow, it must have been extremely hard to be the one laughing at that during that time when everyone took that so seriously. Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And it's like, it makes me wonder as well, like, what kind of things right now do we think are normal? But like in 20 years' time, we're going to look back and be like, oh my gosh, that was problematic.
But there's a part in the story where Marilyn runs away, kind of abandons everyone and everything.
That was actually like my favorite part of the book. I feel like that was the most exciting bit to read about. And it actually was the part, even though like Lydia dies, I actually found this part the most sad, because I think she really, really loves her children. And I know like it says throughout that she has a favorite, and obviously she doesn't know how to express her love to her children in the most healthy way, but I think she really, really loves her children. And I think that was a difficult decision for her. But like that scene where she phones up the house just to hear their voice but doesn't say anything, I was just like, oh my goodness, like this is so hard for you to have to decide between these two important things in your life. But I guess she knew that the kids would be taken care of in a way so that she could go and do her own thing. But at the end of the day, she found out she was pregnant and she got ill, and she went to the hospital, and then they phoned James and she had to go back home. I don't know if she would have gone back home had she not fainted and had to go to hospital. You know, like another thing is like, did everything, like, was she just so passive in her life that she actually wasn't in charge of any of her own choices? And that was her one chance to like make her own choice, and she chose to leave, and then it was taken away from her again.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit heartbreaking for me. When she left, and then when Lydia finds the book, and then when Lydia makes this promise of being like, if my mother comes back, I'll be whatever she wants. I was like, no, like don't say that. I think during this whole time when Marilyn was away, I was thinking about the kids, about Nate and Lydia. And when Lydia said that, like, I'm going to be whatever she wants if she comes back, I just didn't see that coming, you know? Like, I thought she was going to be angry or why not? But then she decides to change herself completely to fit in what her mother wants, so she can stay. And I think that at the end of the day, it's what makes her, like, go crazy, because she couldn't be herself.
Yeah, she's made this promise, like, just based on, like, a temporary feeling of, like, I need my mother back. She's made this promise. And she basically devotes her whole life to that promise. But at the same time, Marilyn also does the same thing in her own way, where she's like, okay, Lydia's playing up to this dream of mine. I'm just going to now devote my whole life to making sure that she can achieve my dreams. And they both are holding each other to these super high standards that they inevitably cannot escape from.
And then there's Nate, who is extremely smart and extremely overlooked. And I think that had Marilyn given a little bit more attention to Nate, maybe Nate could have been, you know, the genius in the family.
Exactly.
Because he was.
Exactly. That's what makes it so heartbreaking, is that, like, you wanted a genius child. You wanted a child that was, like, naturally well-liked. You have one. He's right there. Your firstborn son. Like, look at him. So why do you think that they, like, favored Lydia?
I think, honestly, because of the way she looked.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, like, to put it simple. I guess for James especially, yeah, because that's what he wanted the most for himself, like, not to be visually so different from anybody else.
Yeah.
And then he has this daughter who can fit in with everybody else.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, why they like her and they want her to be better, I guess.
It's almost like they had, like, no hope for their other children because they didn't have the same looks as other people around them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then instead of, like, I guess, equipping all three of their children to just, I don't know, believe in themselves, they were like, well, two of you don't look the same as the other, so we're going to favor her because she's an easier starting point than the other two. And it's like, what kind of parenting tactic is that? I was going to say, like, the fact that you said about, like, how they never communicated, it's like the parents are, like, the heads of the household, whatever, both the parents, and they're not setting an example for their children on communication. And if the parents can't communicate if the parents can't communicate with each other and they can't communicate with their children, then their children will never learn how to communicate. And I think a lot of the issues between the children have stemmed from their parents, and a lot of the issues with the parents have stemmed from the society. And I think it just trickles down, and it's like, well, who breaks the chain?
What do you think about the affair?
I'm never a fan of affairs. I don't think that's a good choice to make in life. But
I just, do not recommend nor encourage.
Yeah. 0 out of 10 recommend. But I can, oh, it's just the way she wrote it. I was like, I understand why you're doing this. It was like the only form of him to not obsess about his daughter died, how she died, her horrible autopsy report, his family breaking down around him. It was the only thing that like gave him a sense of escapism. And normally, if it had been a different author, probably I wouldn't have sympathized with him. But the way she wrote it, I was like, oh, poor James, you know? And I was like, what's happening to me? I don't normally think this.
Luisa was there for him. And it was like a little bit of an escape to all that was troubling him, yeah, and the guilt that he might have felt.
Yeah.
So I understand. But there's this scene where, I don't remember exactly, but they are in the car, Luisa, yeah, James, and Lydia. And Lydia just like spots it, like right, yeah, on, like, she's sleeping with my dad.
But that was before and, they were even sleeping
and that
together.
Was before. And yeah, that was before. So then I was like, like, there was already like something going on. So maybe even if Lydia had not died, something was going to happen there.
That's true.
You know?
And Luisa seemed pretty, it was like was it not like a teacher assistant kind of thing? Like, was she not a lot, mm-hmm, younger than him? And I think she was pretty adamant that that was going to happen. And she swooped in there when he was vulnerable. And yeah, she was like, I'm going for it.
Yeah, no, I think she was like 25 or something. I think at some point they say in the book she's 25. Yeah. Okay, so now it's that time of the year when we discuss a moment where Lydia steps off the boat into the water. So do you think there was a part of her that expected or wanted to drown, or you thought she was going to make it?
I think she wanted to think she could make it. I think she was trying to prove to herself that she could do it. And, like, she just had this moment of realization that she was going to, like, take control of her own life and she was going to stop being passive in her life. And I think she needed, like, this one thing for herself to be like, look what I can do on my own. So I don't know if she expected it or wanted it, but I think maybe she was curious about it. I guess, like, oh, maybe there's a chance I won't make it. But I think that even if she knew that she would struggle, I think she'd been told, I think I said this in my review, she'd been told by Nath years ago when he'd pushed her in the water to like kick, you can do this, kick. And so I think she thought she was like equipped with the right tools to know how to save herself if she was ever in a difficult situation. And that, and you know, her parents had always taught her that she cannot fail. It's not appropriate for her to fail. But that's exactly what kills her, because she goes under and she can't save herself. And I think it's a metaphor that the world wasn't made for somebody like Lydia, who's not white and who is a woman. In the 70s, society hasn't taught her how to stay afloat, and they haven't taught her parents how to keep her afloat either, and so she drowns. And I think it just shows that, like, she can't do anything outside of what's been carved out for her. And that's like the truth of society then, and still kind of like society now.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah, I do think it is, as I said before, I kind of expected the narrator to tell me a little bit more about, yeah, what she was thinking. Like, did she intend to commit suicide? Like, did she think she could magically learn how to swim? Did she not care? Sometimes, yeah, you drown in your own expectations or in somebody else's expectations, and you're really trying and struggling, exactly, to be like the best person for, you know, trying to be the best daughter or the best sister or the best girlfriend, wife, whatever. Yeah. Sometimes you just can't.
Exactly.
Even though you really, really try, but it's impossible.
Yeah. I think, like, if you don't interpret the ending as something metaphorical, the book doesn't work, because, yeah, she just had this, like, really logical and, like, inspirational moment with herself. And it seemed like, why would you step out into the water if you don't know you can swim? Like, that's not a logical decision. So I think if you don't interpret it as a metaphor, it doesn't really work. I do maybe think that, like, the author could have found a more, I guess, constructive way to write the ending that didn't leave it open for interpretation. Like maybe she didn't ever decide to step out. Maybe she fell or something and then had this kind of moment under the water where she was like, I can do this. I've been taught to do this. And then can't. I think maybe that would have been a little bit more effective than her deciding to do this, because then it's like, is it suicide? Is it an accident? But I don't know. I think Celeste was really deliberate about it, but I can see how the ending doesn't work for everybody.
Do you think that if Lydia hadn't drowned, if she made it home, things would have been different for her and the family?
I think that's why like this book kind of sits with me so much, because it's like I don't know. And it's sort of like the author being like, I know everything I never told you as well, like saying that to the readers. And I'm like, Celeste, why? so I don't know, maybe, but would it have gotten her anywhere in that society? And I think that's what the author's trying to say, is that like, even if she had come out the other end, there wouldn't have been a place for her. So it was just like a society thing at the end of the day. So I think like she could have said to her mom and her dad, listen, I don't want to be this person that you're trying to make me into be. And they would have taken their time and they would have accepted that for her. But then I think at the end of the day, the author's trying to say, even if she'd gotten past that, it wouldn't have worked for her.
I think the fact that she died, hopefully, I don't know, but maybe will change things. You know, I think maybe after she died, they learned to be better at communicating with each other, you know?
Yeah.
They learn, okay, we lost one child. We don't want to lose another one. I think that kind of at the end, that's what happened with Hannah. Like they acknowledge their existence, that she's there. And like when Marilyn hugs her and all of this, I was like, okay, like this gives me hope that when you lose someone, maybe it makes you think of ways of not to lose everybody else.
Yeah. And you can definitely see that happening with James and Hannah, and then also with Nath, like he becomes an astronaut, and it's like, I don't know. It's sometimes I think like what the author's trying to do and what she's trying to say is like a little bit contradictory at times, because I think her overall statement is like, look at this sexist, racist world we live in and how it's treating people and how it's affecting people. And then at other times she's going, but look at what Nath can do. And he's an Asian boy. Look what he can do. So I think she's trying to say society is crap, but there's hope. And same for like the situation with sexism. Like she's saying that like society makes it so hard for a woman to have a family and a career, but there's hope because look what Jack's mom does.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, anytime, seriously.
Any
other time I see you are reading a book that I'm reading, I'm going to ask you to do this.
Yeah,
let me tell you that.
Oh, that makes me so happy, because sometimes I finish a book and I'm like, I need to talk about this.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to ask really quick, have you read any Victoria Schwab stuff?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I would recommend Vicious to start with. It's kind of like a sci-fi fantasy thing, but it's just so good. But her new book just came out, and it's called The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, and it's about this girl who sells her soul to the devil.
Oh my God.
And
that sounds interesting.
It sounds so good. So after I finish Rebecca, that's my next read. So just throwing that out there, if you get your hands on a copy, let me know.
Thank you. Same. Hope you enjoy it. Are you thinking of watching Little Fires Everywhere?
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm going to watch it this weekend. I want to watch it with Ali, so I'll see if he's free. I think he's working, but I just want to watch it with somebody else. And because now in Glasgow, we're back with restrictions.
Really?
Yeah. We're not allowed to go into anybody's houses. We're not allowed to go to any restaurants, pubs. And we can only meet one other family outdoors. And it's freezing cold, so that doesn't happen.
So that's not going to happen.
So I only have one friend that I can see in real life, and that's my husband, which is fine, but...
Yeah, definitely fine. Yeah, let me know how you guys like it, especially if he doesn't know anything about the plot or anything.
I know, that's always fine.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much. This will be out on Monday, so wait for it.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, bye.
Thank you for listening all the way through to this little conversation, discussion-ish, review-ish of Everything I Never Told You. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, let me know. Slide to my DMs. Don't assume someone already did. And I will leave you my socials on the show notes below. Thank you so much again for tuning in. And I will see you next time. Bye. Okay, bye.